You are listening to CICK News on 93.9 FM Smithers Community Radio. We are broadcasting from the train car located on unceded Gidimden territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. This is part one of a two-part series where we discuss cryptozoology and a creature that goes by many names. Sasquatch, Bigfoot, the Forest People. In this episode, we interview a local who has spent many years in remote BC forests. According to the Canadian Encyclopedia, cryptozoology is the scientific study of unknown animals about which only circumstantial, or at best insufficient, material evidence is available. Because these animals are unknown rather than monstrous, the term cryptid, from the Greek kryptos, meaning hidden, was introduced in 1985 by Canadian cryptozoologist John Wall, and has gradually replaced monster in their description. Cryptids are reported from many parts of the world in local folklore and explorers' reports. Sasquatch, or Bigfoot, is said to be a large, ape-like creature that lives primarily in the forests stretching from the west coast of British Columbia to Northern California, and to a lesser extent throughout North America. When searching for Indigenous legends that link to the Forest People, I found a great little summary from a non-for-profit organization that produced the Canada 150 signature project, Sasqua. The page is titled Christy Lane Sinclair on the Legend of the Sasquatch. Christy is a Haida Nation and Cree television producer and director. She heard the accounts from James Leon of the Ste'elis Band and Jim Hart of Haida Gwaii in the summer of 2016 to further her research for an upcoming Sasquatch television documentary. And here I quote, "In our contemporary culture, we look for science and a practical truth, but for Indigenous peoples, oral transmission was a way of keeping record or stories, history, and knowledge. The Indigenous perspective of the Sasquatch then and now has not changed all that much. A rich oral tradition that runs in tandem with pictorial history and artwork tells a story spanning from the beginning of time. It's a story about a mystical being that we don't quite understand, but also a story of courtesy and relation. These stories reveal a deep respect and the sacred power in a creature that is not to be meddled with, spiritually or physically. To Indigenous people, legends of this ape-like or wild man creature has existed since time immemorial. The Musqueam First Nation calls the creature Seskuts. The Stolo tribe calls it Saksquik. The Haida, Gagikid. The Nuhuk, it's Bok. To the Heltsiuk, the Flofla. And the list goes on. The legends of Sasquatch have been part of the Ste'elis Band for centuries. The word Sasquatch derives from the Ste'elis word Sesquits, meaning wild man, and tells the story of a caretaker who watches over the lands of the Ste'elis, spanning over the Harrison and Chehalis Lakes region of British Columbia. The Ste'elis have adopted an image of Sasquatch as their logo, and furthermore, their national flag. Sesquits is not a monster, but not to be meddled with. It is believed that if you see a Sesquits, it means you are in the right place at the right time. It is a good omen. To the Haida, Gahid is a part of a long and rich history of the wild man. It is believed that sometimes a human gets lost, and when he reaches the brink of death, sometimes he transforms into a supernatural being, a wild man, a Gahid. Something to be respected, and were in essence a relative of the Haida people. Dances and song are still strong forces keeping Gaid a stronghold in Haida culture. So that was the description of Christy Lane Sinclair's TV documentary. I did some research to see if this came out. It received funding in 2021 from the Cross Currents Canada Documentary Fund, so hopefully we'll see that come out soon. If you're interested in the Gahigid, there's a movie that came out in 2018 titled Edge of the Knife, and this was a drama film co-directed by Gwai Edenshaw and Helen Haig Brown, and it's the first feature film spoken only in the Haida language. It's set in 19th century Haida Gwaii, and it tells the classic Haida story of a traumatized and stranded man who transforms into Gahigid, the wild man. I know that you can find this on Shudder, the horror streaming service, and it's a fascinating watch. Signs of the forest people include footprints, hair, and droppings. You may also see beds, nests, and bowers made for a large creature. You may hear growl-like sounds and whistles, rocks being hit together, sometimes rhythmically. You may also hear stumps or logs being hit with a stick. You may have rocks thrown at you. And you may smell something that has been described as the odor of a wet dog that has rolled in garbage. And when it comes to local connections, the Coast Mountain College actually has a cast of a supposed Bigfoot print. That is, when you find a footprint in the mud, you can pour some plaster in there and take a cast of it. I was able to confirm that this cast exists, but unable to get the story of how it appeared at the college before this story ran. There are a lot of analyses on casts. These look at the foot length and width, the heel width, the step length between the footprints, the toe length and mobility, the foot to height relationship, and also the flexibility of the foot, where midfoot pressure ridges indicate pronounced flexibility in the mid-tarsal joint. And in more local connections to the world of the forest people, there is a local author, Leonard West from Houston, who wrote the book Bigfoot, Challenge of the Century, a novel entwining elements of fiction and reality and set in Houston. The author of the story is led to a prehistoric cave site with priceless artifacts, gold and diamonds, quite accidentally when a family of Bigfoot / Sasquatch befriend him. So that looks like a fun adventure novel. Another artist who grew up in the Bulkley Valley and has since moved on to Toronto is Graham Rameau, a Canadian illustrator well known for his Bigfoot-themed books titled In Me Own Words, The Autobiography of Bigfoot, Me Write Book, It Bigfoot Memoir, and Bigfoot, I Not Dead. I've seen a few pages of these books, and they are hilarious. I look forward to getting my hands on them and reading them. There are several well-known Sasquologists, Sasquatch researchers. One of the first was René Dahinden, who immigrated to Canada from Switzerland in 1953, and after hearing of Sasquatch shortly after his arrival, moved to BC. He collected hundreds of Sasquatch footprint casts and interviewed hundreds of witnesses along the west coast of North America. A BC-based author of many books on Sasquatch is John Green, who compiled a database of over 1,000 Sasquatch or Bigfoot sightings in North America between the early 19th century and 1995. John Green first began investigating sightings and track finds in 1957, and as a renowned authority in the field, Green appeared as a keynote speaker at three of the major scientific Sasquatch symposia. This began with the May 1978 Anthropology of the Unknown, Sasquatch and Similar Phenomena Conference at the University of British Columbia. John Bindernagel was a wildlife biologist who moved from Ontario to BC in the 1970s to search for Sasquatch. Bindernagel believed that the Bigfoot phenomena should receive more attention from serious scientists and remarked, "The evidence doesn't get scrutinized objectively. We can't bring the evidence to our colleagues because it's perceived as taboo. What the public and the scientific community both need is a change of perspective." Let's now hear from Smithers area scientist Jim Pojar, a botanist, ecologist, and forester who has lived and worked in British Columbia for 50 years. I interviewed him about the forest people.
I'm a botanist, ecologist by training, and came to BC in 1970 and went to graduate school at UBC in their Department of Botany, where I met Vladimir Kraina, a forest ecologist, renowned forest ecologist. And I wasn't his student, but I had a job as his summer field assistant for a couple of summers. And so picked up a lot of knowledge about the forests of British Columbia during those summers, because we did field work all over the province. And then 1975, I started working for the BC government for the Ecological Reserves Program in Victoria. So did that for 3 years, and again did lots of traveling around with my boss, Bristol Foster, who's a wildlife biologist, mammal biologist. And then in 1978, Rosamond and I moved to Smithers from Victoria, and I got a great job with the BC Forest Service as a forest ecologist working in our research group based here in Smithers. And then I did that for 25 years before resigning. And then we went up to the Yukon for 4 years and came back in retirement in 2008. And have been here ever since, here in Smithers.
It's a long time in the Smithers area then, and working in the forests. So I could imagine you've collected a lot of interesting stories that way.
There are many stories.
On the topic of Sasquatch, have you personally experienced an interaction, or have you heard many stories from others?
Mostly the latter, but one time we were in the Kootsmatine River Valley, if you know about that. Kootsmatine it's been established as a grizzly bear sanctuary now, and it's a valley, I guess, northwest of Prince Rupert. But we were doing this field work, 30 years ago, probably, before the area had been formally protected, and we were working with bear biologists, basically trying to describe the habitat types of the valley and assessing their importance for the bears that lived there. And one time in the valley bottom, we came upon a sedge marsh or sedge fen, like a wetland. It wasn't in the estuary, it was up the river a ways. And you often see the grizzlies and the Kootsmatine grazing on the sedges in the estuary, but this one was, the sedge marsh was inland up the river a bit, and something had clipped all the sedges to an even height, as if they'd been weed whacked to a 30 centimeter height, and we just wondered about that. I mean, it could have been done by a bear, because they do like to eat the sedges, especially in the spring when they're still tender. But of course, we speculated about the possibility that a Bigfoot would do that sort of thing. But that was the only time I've had I wouldn't even call it an interaction, but a personal encounter with some evidence. But yeah, taking, li-
That's too bad.
Yeah, it's really sad, but you could understand how that would happen, especially because there weren't that many women in that office at that time.
She mentioned how she felt with that experience. Like, was it frightening, or did she feel just curiosity?
Well, both. But she said it was kind of creepy. Because whatever it was just kept watching her. I don't know how close it was, but close enough that she could see the face turn toward her. So that was, yeah, that was one that really made an impression on me. And then there was another report from along Gardner Canal. It connects basically Kitimat with Kamano and the Kitlop. So it's this long, narrow fjord, sort of southeast of Kitimat. And there were some people who were going down, again, in a boat down Gardner Canal. So they're going from Kitimat, I think, to the Kitlop or the old village of Kamano. I'm not sure which one. But on the side of the fjord, it's a very steep-sided fjord, and it's got these granite slabs that don't have many trees on them because they're so steep and they get swept by avalanches. But they noticed, again, a creature sort of scuttling sideways across one of these steep rocky slabs. And of course they're in the middle of the fjord, quite a ways away from whatever it was, but it was big and it was moving horizontally, almost like a crab, but on all fours. And again, there was speculation, well, what the heck was this? They didn't think it was a bear. Of course it could have been a bear, but because bears will do that, things like that. But there's lots of First Nations Haisla stories about Bigfoot down that way. And of course there's Monkey Beach, which is called Monkey Beach for a reason. And Eden Robinson wrote a novel with that title. Not that she says much about possibility of Sasquatch, but it's in there. Yeah, so those were two of the regional stories that made a big impression on me. There are lots of reports from the Nass River, but I haven't heard them from anyone directly. It's just second or third hand. And then there was another one more down the south coast, like Night Inlet, that sort of place, where, again, some bear biologists who were studying grizzlies down there came upon what they described as a bower built against the side of a cliff, kind of on the river terrace, but up against the base of the cliff, and was made of lots of branches and boughs that were kind of interlaced to form like a wiki up or a bit of a lean-to, and it was I had dry grass, moss, and stuff inside, so kind of like a shelter made by some creature that probably had an opposable thumb, but at least had hands to create that. So again, this was a report from wildlife biologists, so who can say what it was or who made it, but it's definitely something to speculate about. Yeah, it's an issue or a theme where there's many observations and they can't all be discounted. There's some that are quite compelling, and basically they're unexplainable. It's unfortunate that we don't have some sort of remains like hair or bone that could be tested for DNA. You'd think that there would be some that have been left behind, but in a wet, acidic environment, that sort of stuff doesn't survive very
So do you think people should be out trying to find Sasquatch? And also, do you feel like that might be a dangerous endeavor?
Well, it could be dangerous for people who are inexperienced in the bush, especially if they do things like just relying on GPS. I mean, there's danger to the people doing the exploring if they're sort of inexperienced in the bush. There's a book called Sasquatch Seeker's Field Manual by a guy named David Gordon. Relatively recently, let's see here, 2015, yeah, so published by Mountaineers Books, and its subtitle is Using Citizen Science to Uncover North America's Most Elusive Creature, and he's got, I mean, if you wanted to get out there and do it, he's got all the things that you should do for a successful search, or at least one that you don't get killed in. So first he talks about, you know, what Sasquatch is, and then how to mount a search, gather evidence, sharing your discoveries, you know, collecting scat, interpreting footprints. And the third part is like a hiking guide to areas in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, BC, where there have been noteworthy sightings and where there are some trails that take you to the areas where these sightings happened. So it's kind of a fascinating little book, a field manual. But whoever does it, they got to be careful, because you get in serious trouble out in that bush, especially in a place like central north coastal BC, which is, you know, seriously severe country.
Yeah, so you'd say the danger would be from the wild itself rather than Sasquatch.
Oh, yeah. I think so. And the wild, including things like grizzly bears. I guess if I would summarize what I choose to believe is, I don't discount all the evidence. I try to still maintain an open mind about it. And I would like Sasquatch to exist. Actually, Jane Goodall said she feels the same way. She would like another primate species, a new one, to exist. And in BC, the context could be an old growth dependent hominid, which would be really timely these days with all the pressure on the few remaining old growth forests.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate you coming on. Jim brings up a fascinating link between the forest people and the environment. Cryptids may now, like other species on the planet, find themselves in an increasingly vulnerable position. Cryptozoologists have begun to play a new role as promoters of environmental values against the decimation of species and the destruction of their natural habitat. A fascinating Facebook and YouTube page called Sasquatch Island is run by Thomas Sewid, who describes himself as a unique modern-day bushman. In the About section of the Sasquatch Island Facebook, it states, "This group is opening the world to know that Turtle Island to the Indians, otherwise known as North America, or as we call it, Sasquatch Island, has a high concentration of Sasquatch/Bigfoot throughout. Over 600 tribes throughout, and this group is trying to get word out from as many indigenous people and tribes about their relationship or perspectives towards creatures." Looking back through posts, you find much connection between Sasquatch and the environment. In a post on March 22, 2022, by Thomas, reads, "I've always stated one of the main reasons I am such a strong advocate for Sasquatch is to bring attention to saving what little giant old-growth timber remains. So many reports of Sasquatch climbing giant trees so fast, they look like they are running on flat ground. Knowing so little about Sasquatch, yet it seems they are dependent upon large trees for hiding, stashing meat, and for observing their surroundings. This shared post exemplifies just how big the endangered old growth is in pockets throughout Vancouver Island. Sasquatch lives matter. That being said, we must protect what little old growth remains." End quote. Many see the figures as environmental teachers, and the issues that they say enrage Sasquatches are the same ones that humans are grappling with. You just heard part one of a two-part series on CICK News, 93.9 FM. In part two, we delve more into the community of cryptozoologists and Sasquatch enthusiasts. Tune in next time, same bat time, same bat place.